want to live confidently in turbulent times? Join us as we explore the book of Daniel in our new series titled, Never Once. And now, here's today's message.
All right, hey everybody, good morning. Welcome to Northgate. My name's John. If you're not normally here, I'm one of the pastors in Northgate. If you came for somebody's baptism or dedication, we're really glad to have you here. Or if you're just a guest and you came in this morning, you picked a really good morning. It's a great time to be together. So how many people, if you don't have young kids, who enjoyed your extra hour of sleep? Right? All right. People with young kids, how was waking up at 5:30? Right? Yeah, that's awesome, isn't it? You always talk yourself into it, like, no, this one's going to be good, and then it never works out in your favor. We're in a series called Never Once, and we're going to jump in because I kind of have an abbreviated message to get to the memberships and baptisms later. But we just started the series last week out of the book of Daniel, talking about how we can live confidently in turbulent times. And today, we get to go to the fiery furnace. We get to go to one of the better-known stories of Daniel, and we're going to kind of explore that and see what we can learn about trust through that. And it's appropriate to talk about trust today as we have people taking this step of baptism and others baptizing and dedicating their kids, because that's a big step of trust, isn't it? That saying, all right, God, you are Lord over my life, and you are Lord over my life to the degree that I want to make that known to everyone else, and I'm going to take this step. And so talking about trust today is a really appropriate thing. And trusting God is one of those great things in principle. Like, people will tell you that, like these wise old Christians be like, well, you got to trust God, and it sounds good, and you know you should, but trusting God in reality is a difficult and messy and kind of scary thing. It really is. You know, if you grew up singing, trust and obey, there's no other way, like, you know that, and you're like, all right, I believe that, but when the rubber meets the road, when we live that out in real life, it's a very difficult thing, and here's why. Because in order to trust God, we have to acknowledge that we are not in control, and that, in fact, is why we need to trust him. If we're going to trust God, it starts by us saying, okay, I can't control all of this. I'm not in complete control. And so therefore, I'm going to put my trust in the one who is in control. And that is an act of humility and an act that's really tough for a lot of us. Personally, I will admit this, I'm kind of a control freak, okay? So anybody else, who are the control freaks in here? Like, where are you guys? Yeah? Yeah, you guys, a lot of you are like, I wouldn't raise my hand just because he told me to, which I get. Let's do it this way. Who is married to a control freak? Who came with a control freak? Yeah, look at those hands. What's up, Amy? Yeah, and you know who we are. Like, I always drive, and it's not that, you know, I think I'm the greatest driver in the world. I just like to have the steering wheel in my hands. In the time that Amy and I have been married and dating, which is like 14 years, now 15 years, she's driven 3 times. I hear that she's a great driver. She tells me that. But, like, she doesn't really care to drive, and I like to be in control, so I'm always driving. I used to, this is a while ago, as you're going to see, I used to get my hair cut every 10 days by the same person. Like, 10 days I was on that schedule, unless it fell on a Sunday, same person, and I would always ask her, is it getting thin? Is it getting thin? She'd be like, no, it's good, it's good. And, you know, every time I'd ask her, and then one time, like, I'd been going for over a year, I said, is it getting thin? She's like, you know, just the slightest bit right in the back, like barely noticeable. And I was like, I won't be back. I don't need to schedule another appointment. She's like, why? I was like, I'm going to shave my head. She's like, no, you don't need to do that. That's crazy. It's like barely thin. I was like, no, I cannot control if I go bald, but I can control when and how quickly, and that's it. And I did. Like, I never went back. I've been shaving my head for 15 years because that was it. I like to be in control. And so in my life, when things are going well, when things seem to be going like I have control of them, I feel like I can trust God. Those are the moments where I say, yeah, I can trust God. Why? Because things are going well. But when they aren't going as well, or when it becomes increasingly apparent that I'm not in control, it becomes a lot harder to trust that God actually is in control. And the reason for that is that I want to base my trust on my circumstances. I want to look around, survey the land, see how things are going, and if things are good or good enough, then I want to trust God. But here's our main point that we're going to pull out of this story today. Trusting God is based on his nature, not your circumstances. Trusting God is based on his nature, not the circumstances that we find ourselves in. Because people came in today. There are people in the sanctuary this morning that came in and life is going pretty well. And so when that's the case, we can say, all right, I trust God. Do you trust God this morning? Absolutely, yes. Amen, brother. You got that. That's good. There are people that came in this morning who are at the end of the rope. who feel like they can't take one more thing, that if one more thing doesn't go in a different way, that they're not sure what they're going to do. And when you're in that spot, to say, I trust God, not because of my circumstances, but because of his nature, because of his character, that is trust. And we're going to learn this through Daniel chapter 3, the account of the fiery furnace, which a lot of you probably know. You probably grew up like watching this on Flannel Graph. Pastor Vern is very generous. I got the lion's den and the fiery furnace. Like, it's a total flannel. I didn't have to study for this stuff. It's just from Sunday school when I was a kid. But last week, he gave you the overview of the book of Daniel and kind of this overarching theme of conviction, the conviction that Daniel was living with. And the setting for this book is in Babylon. Now, Babylon took over Israel, and as a part of taking over the nation, one of the things they did was take the best and brightest people out so that they could assimilate them to their lifestyle. And then they kind of became Babylonian, you know, they kind of infiltrated the culture that way. And so Daniel was one of those, and there's some other bright leaders that we're going to be introduced to in this chapter as a part of the Babylonian captivity. And so King Nebuchadnezzar, he's the boss at this point, cool name, fun to say, words to spell, and he has this idea where he makes this huge image of gold. Now it says it's 60 cubits high and 6 cubits wide, so that's about 90 feet by 9 feet, which is pretty big. Like, you can probably picture 90 feet, or 9 feet. 90 feet is a good distance. If you've gone to a baseball game, that's home base to first. I mean, it's any of the bases, but that's about 90 feet. So it's pretty from here to the back of the sanctuary, and then 9 feet wide. If you've never been to a baseball game, the Rockefeller Christmas tree is about 90 feet. So that will give you, go watch Home Alone, and you can pick up that. Home Alone 2, Lost in New York, you can pick that up. But this is a huge, huge image of gold that he has made. And so he makes that, and then he summons all of his inner circle. Now, there's this crazy thing. When you read this chapter later in your devotions, you're going to see this, that they make these crazy lists, and they do it every time. So it doesn't just say, like, he summons his inner circle. It says he summons the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other provincial officials to come to the dedication of the image that he had set up. Now, anytime it mentions them again, it gives the entire list over and over. It's kind of a funny part of this chapter. So all those people come to this image. He's just made this, and they come, and they've got, like, the giant scissors and the red ribbon and, like, the, you know, the hard hats that they wear, and they're all there for the dedication of this. And they're probably kind of wondering what this is going to be about. And then the herald comes, and he's the guy that announces things to everyone. And he says, all right, everyone, listen up. Here are the new rules that we're going to live by. Anytime you hear the sound of this particular music, and there's, again, a long list of all these instruments, anytime you hear this song, you must fall down, and you must worship the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. That's the rule. Consequence of error, right? You got, what are you going to do if you don't do that? If you do not fall down and worship this thing, you'll be immediately thrown into a blazing furnace. It's like, oh, all right, well, that's pretty clear. You know, that's a good consequence there if you want to keep things working. And so that's how it worked. When the music played, everyone, almost everyone, fell down and they worshiped. Maybe they wanted to serve the king, or maybe they just didn't want to get thrown into a fiery furnace. So they did what they were told to do. But there's just one problem in the kingdom with this grand scheme, and the astrologers actually came to King Nebuchadnezzar and said, may the king live forever, which is always like the interesting opening line. I don't know, I think that's funny. If you're a boss, don't ask people to do that at work, right? Don't have like your teachers come and be like, may the principal live forever, and then like they have to go into what they want to say. Just let them talk. So they say, remember that decree that you issued? Remember that thing you put out there, and you had this idea that whenever we hear the music, we all run up and we worship that statue thing that you made, and if anybody didn't do it, they're going to get thrown in the fiery furnace. Like, you remember that, right? Last week, Pastor Vern said that King Nebuchadnezzar had a bit of an anger problem. He also has a bit of an ego problem. So they are appealing to that, and they say, well, anyway, there are some Jews, actually some guys that you've put in pretty important positions. We would hate to single them out, but if you need to know their names, they're Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Anyway, those guys, they don't pay any attention to what you said. They do whatever they want to, and they somehow think that they're above the rules that you've created. So to recap, King Nebuchadnezzar and his giant, frail ego, he has this idea that whenever the particular song is played, that everyone must come, and they must react in the way that he says they have to react. And failure to do that is a betrayal to him and a betrayal to the nation. And so the king, when he hears what's going on, he summons these three guys, and they're brought before him. And he says to these men, guys, is it true? Is it true what they're saying? And they come up, and he says, you don't serve my gods. You don't worship the image of gold that I have set up. Now, he must have liked these guys because he's kind of gracious, actually, in this moment, because he could have just said, my inner circle said this, and you're in the fiery furnace. Like, that's it. We've got people, we've got lots of people saying they've seen you not bow down. But he actually gives them a chance. He says, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to play the music one more time, and that time you will bow down and worship. And if you don't, you know what's going to happen. So he kind of gives them a little grace and gives them one last shot to do the right thing according to him. And he ends where he says, and if I do that, if I throw you in that fiery furnace, what God will be able to rescue you from my hand? And I want to break into the story here to read you these verses from 3:16 to 18, because this is so good. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to him, King Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it, and he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. But even if he does not, we want you to know, your majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up. Now, I just want to park there on those verses for a little bit because there is so much about trust in just those three verses that we can pick up. And the first thing, which I see as a big component of trust, is this. When we trust God, we know that he is able to do what we are asking. When we trust God, we know that he can do it. They said the God we serve is able to deliver us. And that's a big component of trust, is knowing that God can do what we're asking him to do. And they believed that God was able to deliver them. And I want you to know, in the situation that you're in the place that you're struggling to trust God, what you've been praying for, that God is able. He is able to do that. And not only if you know your scripture, I told you he's able to do what we're asking. If you know your scripture in Ephesians 3:20, you know he's actually able to do immeasurably more than all we can ask or imagine. And so this is a huge component of trust. It's a great place to start, to say, God, we believe and we know that you are able. Now, if you've ever prayed with Pastor Greg for someone that was sick or that was, you know, maybe dying on the way in a bad way health-wise, he does this thing, and not always, and he's retiring, so we can, like, open up his bag of tricks now anyway. He does this thing where he'll pray, and he'll pray, say that it's your mom. He'll pray for your mom. He'll pray, you know, that God will comfort her, and he'll pray that you comfort your family and strengthen you and help you get through this and give the doctors wisdom and all the things that we honestly and earnestly pray for. But they'll say something to the effect of, but God, we know. We know that you could just heal her right now. We believe that and we know that, and we would be absolutely crazy to not ask you to do that. And that's such a big part of trust, is saying, you know, hey, God, this is how this might go, and we know that everybody doesn't live forever, but we know you, God, and we know that you could heal her like that, and we ask you to do that. That's a beautiful picture of trust, and that's kind of what they're saying here is, God, we know that you are able to do what we are asking. And that first part is awesome. That's great. The second part of this is unfortunate, because when we trust God, it does not ensure the outcome. Now, I wish it did. Truthfully, I wish it did. I wish that if you trusted God enough that your healing was guaranteed, or if you trusted God enough that all of your children would grow up to be exactly what you always hoped they would be to grow. I wish that that was how it worked, that if you got enough people praying for you, that things would turn out the way that you want it to turn out. But look at this. The whole passage hinges on this one phrase, but even if he does not. Because they knew that God was able to do what they were asking him to do. They believed that deeply. But they also said, even if he does not. And we need to be the kind of people that have an even if trust. People that say, God, I trust you, but even if I don't get the job, I'm still going to trust you. God, I trust you, but even if she is never healed, I'm still going to trust you. God, I trust you, but even if he never comes home, I'm going to continue to trust you. Because the whole thing hinges on having that kind of even if kind of trust. Because don't miss this about these three guys. They believe deeply that God was able to do what they were asking him to do. But they also would have believed that even as the fire covered over them and burned them to death. I believe that. Because they had that even if kind of trust. They said, God, we know you can, but even if you don't, we know that you are still good and you are still God. And that ties back to the best book that I've read on trust, which is Ruthless Trust by Brennan Manning, where he tells us, trust in God does not presume that God will intervene. It's not that if you just trust God enough, everything's going to turn out the way that you want. So don't ever be the people that say to someone else, well, if you have enough faith, you'll be healed. Or if you just trust God enough, this problem is going to go away. Because I want you to know, frequently the people with the deepest level of trust are those who have had to face painful things head on and say, God, I'm going to keep following you. I'm going to keep trusting you, even if you do not do what I'm asking you to do. And here's the next thing that we can pull from trust about from this passage. When we trust God, we do the right thing and we leave the results up to him. They said, we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold that you've set up. Now, this is the logical, consequential next step to us saying, all right, we can't ensure the outcome, we can't control this, so what do we do? We do the next right thing, and we leave the results to God. We do what we need to do. They knew that they could not worship as they've been told to do. They knew that for sure. They had that conviction. It was clear, and they could not do it. Now, did they know if doing that would cost them their lives? Did they know if doing that would cost them this honored place that they had in the kingdom? Did they know how it would all turn out? They didn't, and that's what makes it trust. And you don't know how your situation is going to turn out. You don't know the five next steps that are going to happen, but what you do know is the next right step to do today. And our job is to do that and to leave the results to God. But that bothers us, doesn't it? Look at what Anthony Hoisington said about trust. He said this like 5 years ago in a staff meeting. It's good enough I wrote it down. I still use it. Trust reminds us how limited and finite we really are, and that's why it bothers us. That's the problem with trust. That's why it bothers me, because it's this reminder that I can't control the outcome, that I can't take the results, that all I can do is the next right thing that God has called me to do, and then to trust him to take it from there. So we know that when we trust God, he's able to do what we're asking. We know that when we trust God, it does not ensure the outcome in our favor, and we know that our job is to do the next right thing and then leave the results up to him. But how does that play out for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Let's go back to the account in verse 19, because now King Nebuchadnezzar was pretty patient with them the first time, but now he is enraged at their noncompliance. He's given them this chance. They blatantly refused to. And so he orders for the furnace to be heated 7 times hotter than normal. And he has soldiers tie them up. They're just in their clothes and they tie them all up right there. And these soldiers go, the strongest soldiers in the kingdom, they throw the men into the furnace. And it's so hot, it says that the soldiers died throwing them in. And so they get thrown in. And undoubtedly, their death at this point was going to be quick and painful. And it was going to be over for them. But all of a sudden, King Nebuchadnezzar, he leaps up and he asks the people around him. He says, wait a minute, wait. We put 3 guys in that fire, right? Everybody, 3 guys in the fire, right? And they're like, yeah. It's like, look, because there's 4 guys in there and one of them looks like the Son of God. And so King Nebuchadnezzar, he approaches the opening. He probably keeps his distance pretty well after what happened to those soldiers. But he yells into them, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out, come here. And so they come out of the fire. You can imagine all the king's advisors around. It says they surrounded them, and they come up to them, and they're looking, and they see that the fire hasn't damaged their skin at all. They see that their clothes are not singed, that the hair on their head is still there. And it says that even their clothes didn't smell like smoke, which if you've gone to a single campfire in your life is super impressive, right? You sit at a campfire with a sweatshirt on, that thing stinks. Their clothes didn't even smell in this fire. That's how unaffected they were by this. In the last verse in this passage, Daniel 3:28, here's what King Nebuchadnezzar says. Praise be to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who sent his angel and rescued his servants. They trusted in him and defied the king's command and were willing to give up their lives rather than serve or worship any god except their own. That's the king. The king that's saying that is the king that they defied. So look, when we trust God, don't miss this last one. When we trust God, the people around us take notice. The people around us take notice. People that don't know God, people that haven't trusted God themselves, maybe even the people sometimes that we're defying, as in King Nebuchadnezzar, they take notice. The tagline on this series is living confidently in turbulent times. I want you to know you can live confidently when you have trust in God. Because of the trust that we have in God, that's what allows us to live confidently. Not that we've figured things out to a certain level or we've achieved this certain point of spirituality. No, we can live confidently when we trust God. But living in turbulent times, the second half of that, actually means that we have a great opportunity to show the people around us what trust looks like. It gives us a fantastic opportunity to do that, because what if King Nebuchadnezzar had never built this idol? What if he had never had this thought in his egotistical mind? You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to build this. I'm going to make everybody bow down. Well, if that hadn't happened, these men would not have had such an incredible opportunity to showcase what true, deep, life-changing trust in God really looked like. They wouldn't have had that chance. So what if you hadn't faced the challenges that you're facing? What if you hadn't gone through those things? What if you had never lost that job? What if your health never became an issue? What if your marriage never fell apart? What if your business hadn't failed? What if you had come from a more functional family? It's tempting to think about those things. It's tempting to walk down those paths and say, God, if this had just happened this way. But if those things hadn't happened, you would never have had such an incredible opportunity to showcase what true, deep, life-changing trust in God really looks like. Let's pray.
Thanks for joining us on the Northgate Podcast. We hope this message has been a blessing to you as you walk with Jesus Christ. For more resources, visit our website at northgatefmc.com or download the Northgate app. Have a wonderful week, and we'll see you next time.